church community during times of crisis and struggle. Ministers and pastoral care committees know that sudden church absence can be a sign of personal crisis. And it's completely understandable. Animals hide pain. It's a survival strategy. When we are at our most vulnerable, when we have lost a job, have suffered a death, have decided to end a relationship, it makes sense that we turn inward to our closest friends and family, and that we hunker down at home a little bit. That's a way to take care of ourselves. But it's also true that our dominant culture has grown intolerant of visible vulnerability. Communal grieving customs that used to provide protection and comfort for families after a death have disappeared. We are expected to return to work quickly after a crisis. Crying in public is shameful, ignored, definitely taboo. When the grocery clerk asks, "How are you today?" we're expected to reply, "Fine," or "Good," or "Can't complain." Not, "My life is falling apart, actually. I'm just trying to keep it together to buy this tub of ice cream." I wonder how many people here have ever cried in the bathroom, at work, or some other public place.
I have.
Lots of times. So it's not that we don't need more support. It's that we're pressured not to ask for it. I know from my own experience and my own observation that most of us draw the circle of support much, much smaller than is good for us. And so here's my personal story about that. In March of 2007, I learned that my family's construction company was going to close. At that time, I had been working there over 9 years as an administrative assistant, then an assistant project manager, and finally a project manager managing my first construction project. The company had existed since before I was born. It's where I grew up. I'd gone there every day after school and on the weekends while my parents worked. I'd had my first paying job there. I worked there several summers during college. And I had thought I would work there the rest of my life. So the news that we would be closing was devastating to me. My entire vision of my future and what my life would be was gone. I was grateful that I had time to figure out what to do next. It was going to take us a couple of years to finish our projects and finally close our doors. But still, my life as I knew it was over. I cried with my brother when he told me. I went home early that day. I called my partner. And that was all. I didn't really see the point of telling my friends about it right away. They were going to ask, you know, "What are you going to do next?" And I didn't know. There was no reason to tell them right away. Nothing was changing immediately. And I didn't want to talk about it until I felt I had a handle on what I was feeling. I certainly didn't want to talk about it if I might end up crying in front of other people. So I just went about my life, business as usual, holding back tears sometimes, but mostly putting on a facade that everything was fine. And everything was fine, except that I had broken out in a rash on my arms and my legs. Great, I thought, like And when the rash didn't go away by the second week, I went to see my doctor. This was 12 days after I'd first been told that the company would close. My doctor asked, "Have you changed your eating habits?" "No." "Have you changed your soap or detergent?" "No." "Did you buy any new clothes or sheets?" "No." And then she asked, "Are you under any stress?" I burst into tears. I described my grief over the closing of the company, and she asked me who I had told, who I had asked for support. And when I told her just my partner, she told me I needed to start talking to my friends about what I was going through. That was the prescription to cure my rash. That's all. So the next morning, I sent a vague email to some friends, letting them know I was under a lot of stress I didn't really feel ready to talk about, but asking for their prayers and support nonetheless. I felt the love in their response to me, even with their not knowing what I was going through, even with email communication. It would be almost another week before I could bring myself to tell one of them specifically what was actually going on, before I could name my hurt and my grief and accept the support that was available to me. So when I tell you that I know it's hard to ask for help, I mean it. And when I tell you that when we don't ask for help, there is a cost to us, body and soul, I mean that too. According to WebMD, stress can wreak havoc on your health. It has been linked to a number of health problems, including depression and anxiety, sleep disorders, headache, high blood pressure, heart disease, obesity, and more. Stress can affect your skin by aggravating skin problems. Stress can also affect your hair and nails. The Mayo Clinic reports that a social support network made up of friends, family, and peers provide a sense of belonging, an increased sense of self-worth, and a feeling of security. Research shows that those who enjoy high levels of social support stay healthier and live longer. Like many of you, I often look to the natural world for both inspiration and information. And this topic got me thinking about what happens to plants under stress. I found a website called gardeningknowhow.com, and it had a wonderful list of things to do to help plants survive shock and distress. This is what jumped out at me. Disturb the roots as little as possible. The more roots that come with the plant when it's being moved or disturbed, the less likely shock will set in. Disturb the roots as little as possible. When I refused to reach out to my friends in my time of hurt and crisis, I let myself be moved and disturbed without bringing my roots with me, without bringing my friends along with me in my hurt and confusion. Our roots keep us anchored and grounded. Our roots keep us nourished. Roots prevent erosion, that process of being worn down. Now, root systems are complex. If you're a gardener, you know there are primary roots, secondary roots, specialized roots. had thought my partner and my family were enough. But I've learned there is no enough when it comes to love and friendship. There is always room for more. There is room for hundreds and thousands of groups. The poet says, "Dear children, you must try to say something when you are in need. Don't confuse hunger with greed, and don't wait until you are dead." I thought I didn't need to talk about my grief because what was anybody going to do about it? Nobody could change what was happening. I confused my hunger for support with the greed to keep my life the same. A dear friend of mine is fond of saying, "It's not needy to have needs." I had always prided myself on my strength, my autonomy, my ability to handle my own problems. And I somehow thought that telling my friends I was having a hard time would somehow undermine my strength, my autonomy, and my ability to handle my own problems. But now I know different. We don't need friends so they can solve our problems for us. And we don't even need friends to do things for us, though that can be helpful in times of turmoil. We just need friends because we need friends. We need friends the way we need air, the way we need water, the way we need sleep, the way plants need roots. And we need as many friends as we can hold. Primary friends, secondary friends, specialized friends. Big, strong friends and fine little friends. Friends spreading in all directions. The more friends, the healthier the soul. I have always had individual friends, but joining a church was the first time in my adult life that I had groups of friends. The four people I turned to in my time of crisis over my family's company closing were co-leaders with me of a group at my home congregation in San Diego. When I emailed that first person telling her what was going on with me, within minutes of hitting send, I had a phone call from another person in that same group of co-leaders. She pretended she was calling me about something else, but it was clear to me and it was okay with me that my news had traveled fast amongst people who loved me. My community was ready and willing to hold me in my time of hurting. And I felt held and supported in a way I never had before. Now, one of the first things I ask people who are in crisis, people who are grieving, people who are coping with illness, I ask about their support system. Who do you cry with? Who do you laugh with? Who is your community? Because this, more than anything, is what makes the difference in our ability to survive and thrive. When I mentioned to one of you that this would be a sermon topic this month, I was asked to talk about how to ask for support. I don't think there's a completely easy way. It's hard to show our vulnerability. It's hard to ask for help. My suggestion is to name what you are feeling and to name what you want. I feel anxious. I would like someone to listen while I talk. I feel sad. I would like to go see a funny movie with you. I feel alone. I would like a friend. Name what you are feeling and name what you want. And then you have to say, I'm not looking for advice. Because most of us have a strong temptation to give advice to our friends in crisis. We're well-meaning. I think it's often because we don't always know what else to say. We want to offer something and we feel lost about what that might be. We doubt that our presence and our listening is enough. But it is. So I know it can be really aggravating to receive unsolicited advice, to be lonely or sad or anxious, and to have someone try to tell you what you should be doing. So you all need to hear, please don't give advice to people in crisis. I really mean it. Unless they specifically ask, is there anything greater than when a friend comes and says, I need some advice? So wait for that. Wait for the invitation. And you all also need to hear that it's okay to say, I am not looking for advice. It's okay to set the boundary. Name what you are feeling and name what you want. And you can name what you don't want. There are many ways to develop support systems. The Mayo Clinic recommends meeting people through volunteer work, joining a gym, taking a class, and looking online for social networking. I was disappointed that they didn't list finding a religious community. Social support is one of the reasons most of us look for religious community. Many people look for and find churches after a time of stress and loss in their lives, like death or divorce. Many of our first-time visitors have suffered a personal crisis in the preceding year. That was true for me when I found Unitarian Universalism. Congregations aren't the only social support available, of course, but I think we offer more than a gym or a class or the internet. I'm biased. We're a place where people of shared values come together to consider what has meaning for us. We make commitments to each other. We take action together. We learn together. And in times of struggle and loss, we are a place besides home to hunker down for a while. My experience is that asking a group of people for support feels very different from asking an individual. And the surprise is, I think it's easier. Maybe other people have different experience, I know, but that's mine. I think it's easier to ask a group, and I think it's easier for a group to respond. I think this is part of why sharing our joys and sorrows is such a beloved part of so many Unitarian Universalist congregations. It's a way to ask the group for support. When there are multiple people being asked for support, then there is a shared responsibility that feels much lighter than when just one person is being asked. Since my time of crisis years ago, I have become something of a glutton for communal support. Really good at naming what I'm feeling and asking for what I want. In seminary, I organized weekly check-in groups, multiple study groups, a blessing ritual for those of us pursuing ministry. So I organized a ritual to bless me, and a support group for those of us searching for internships at the same time, because I wanted support there as well. And in April of last year, I called together a different four friends to help me hold something like a memorial service for my family's company, which had finally closed its doors. I talked about my family and our accomplishments and my grief, and I cried and I laughed. must say something when we are in need, because we shouldn't confuse hunger with greed, and we shouldn't wait until we are dead. Blessed be. I'd like to invite you to remain seated and to sing a meditation hymn together, followed by a short time of silence. It's not a hymn in the hymnal. I'm going to lead it, and we won't have piano. So we're going to do call and response. It's very easy. All the words are, "Comfort me, O my soul." So we'll do call response the first time through, and then we'll see if we can sing it together.